You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vohner, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this evening. Many of you are planning to go to the polls in the next few weeks, and many people will probably enter the polling places with thoughts of what's happening to my country. Are we still the great country we always were, or is this a decline that may never end? Many of these issues going back and forth, many of these issues have a profound effect on people, but very few people will talk about that. That's why my guest this week is attorney and author William Cooper. His new book is How America Works and Why It Doesn't. And I asked Bill to come on and talk about the motivations, the ideas that he had in putting this book together. And I must tell you, it is a nonpartisan approach, but probably touched upon many of the things that have affected both you and I in our minds about America. Are we still the great country that we remember? And what needs to be changed to make it still a better country? Bill, nice to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is as I said earlier, many people are going to go into the polls and they're going to wonder, am I answering this question right? Is this the right person for this country? Others maybe have a better handle on that. But like you and like myself, I think there's millions of Americans who are saying, you know, America works great in this respect, but we really need to do something else in another way. And I'm just wondering if that was the similar thing that got you motivated to write the book.
Yeah, absolutely. I think our country, like all large countries, is a mix of positives and negatives, things that work well and things that don't. And I think it's helpful to have a perspective that recognizes and accepts the whole totality of the country, not just one version or the other.
The idea of how America works, would you agree that we are still a great country?
I would, absolutely. And I think if you look at the long scope of history, which I do in the first part of the book, it's undeniable in my view that the American experiment has been very successful. The way people lived before our structure of government, Western democracies, undoubtedly was worse in general overall than it is today. And we've come a very long way, done a lot of good in this country. So absolutely, on the whole, taking a long view, I think we are a success.
Now, on the other side of that, if you were to add, and this is your own personal view on this and perhaps things that you put in the book, what do you feel are the shortcomings?
Well, I think what's happened in the last 25 years or so, really the turn of the century, is with the increasing ubiquity of the internet in our lives, we've seen an acceleration of polarization. So in the book, I talk about three factors combining to make us overly polarized, which really is the root cause of our problems today. The first is age-old human bias, which we've all had and always will have. But the combination of that with the second element, which is the internet and the echo chambers online in our new media ecosystem, primarily with social media, and that combines with the third element, which is the structure of the political system itself. We've got two parties that are juggernauts in a super rivalry. We don't have a multiplicity of parties. We also have other issues like closed primaries and gerrymandering and things like that. And when you combine all three of those, you get the irrationality that we see today. And I think that underpins so much of what we're struggling with.
Do you think that the average American, that the average American has become so soured because today you have such a divergence of ideas and opinions and attitudes that were, basically never had anything like this 30, 40 years ago? I mean, you had your local newspapers, you had your local news outlets, but today you can get, 1,000 different points of view on just about anything, in a given day. Does that shape people's minds to the point where it distorts reality.
Absolutely. And I think we've got a mixture of people on both sides of the aisle who are very fervent in their views, very polarized and partisan. And then you've got moderates who look at both sides screaming at each other and are repelled by what they see. And the mixture, when you add it all together, is quite toxic and quite counterproductive if the goal is to have a democracy focused on addressing this country's challenges, and we have many.
There's a difference, I feel there is anyway, and I want to get your sense on this. There's a difference as to somebody who is maybe in their 60s, 70s, or even older, have one opinion of this country, and a much younger generation who is just coming up, let's say, you know, young people in middle school, high school, college, just finding their way, experiencing America in a completely different fashion. My sense is that that alone may be a diverse issue right there. Generations, no two generations, you know, the baby boomers say, well, we were the greatest, as Tom Brokaw's book titled, was the greatest generation. Well, that was an opinion, of course. Young people look back and say, oh, God, the way you guys did things is ridiculous. You know, you're not up to speed on this. You know, things have changed. And to some degree, they're entirely right. But what I'm getting at is you can't get first of all, you can't get all people on board to think the same way. But when you have generations with a divide, you know, in their mindset, their attitudes toward politics, their attitudes toward their country, to the work environment, it's awful hard to find a cohesion, right?
Absolutely. I think you're right about the generational divides. They're very significant. And every generation, again, has its strengths and its weaknesses, right? I mean, 50 years ago, the country in a lot of ways was very admirable, and there's a lot to be said for the greatest generation and previous generations, and a lot for people from those generations to be proud of. And at the same time, we've come a long way in really important areas like civil rights and inclusion and things of that nature. So it's a mix, and every generation does have their own claim to being the greatest. I think one thing that we do see right now with young people, often, not always, but often, is a lack of appreciation for how difficult it was to build this country to succeed over time. The natural state of affairs for human beings is not to be in a stable democratic society, but if you're under the age of, you know, 50, that's all you've known in this country to a significant extent. And I think some people lose sight of that historical context. And I don't mean to be overcritical of young people, and I'm in that group myself. I was born in 1980. But it is the case that if you're not a student of history and you don't put the country in the proper historical context, you can really have a misleading view of what we're supposed to be and how we fit into that long arc of history.
The blame is often levied on the political system, whether it's at the national level or the state level or even local level. You know, there's always been a disdain for politics. People feel that politicians and people elected to office don't have a sincere wish or hope as they go into office that they're really in it for themselves. And I suppose to some degree that's true. There's good and bad in just about everything. But it sounds in the last decade, and there's been this as well as anybody, there's been a lot of throwing back and forth, if you will, the tomahawk and the arrows of flying back and forth. But it resonates with the public, in my view, that all politics is bad, There's nobody caring anymore for the people of this country. Just this week, we had that major hurricane in Carolina, and right away, the finger stopped pointing. At the federal government, at FEMA. So let me ask you: is the political system broken to the point where they can no longer garner the respect? Or is this, again, just part and parcel of the age that we live in and the, you know, the effects of social media?
It's a great question. Yeah, I think it's a mix. I think there's definitely still plenty of people in politics and in government who do good work. There are many noble public servants. Lots of people wake up every day, do a really good job. But they're mixed in with people in government for the wrong reason. I mean, a lot of people, particularly in the House of Representatives on the federal level, who are more interested in their next Instagram post than they are in governing and solving the really big challenges we face. So I think it's a mix. And on the whole, I think the government could do a lot better. I think we have really significant problems in this country that have been building and getting worse and worse for years. And yet government just seems incapable of intelligently and rationally addressing them. And that goes back to our elected officials and their objectives and goals. I think there's a lot of room for improvement. And unfortunately, I think the trends are moving in the wrong direction.
I just want to, before we continue, I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is attorney and author William Cooper. His new book, How America Works and Why It Doesn't, really spells out in a very fair and a very level playing field, what is still great about this country and where the need for improvement. And Bill, again, as you've stated, you consider this still a great country. I still consider it a great country. No, it's not perfect by any means. And there's certainly a lot that has to be done. But again, I don't want to sound like the enemy of social media or any media outlets at all. We ourselves are a media outlet here. But when you have a million different thoughts and ideas, constantly going through people's minds. I mean, I have people just say, I can't take it anymore. I'm on overload. This is just too much. Those improvements that you were talking about and namely government, can politicians hide behind that and say, you know what, by the time people really figure out where we need to be, where we really need to be and how we get this, how we get ourselves back on track, I'll have already been 10, 15 years in Congress or in my local assembly, and by that time I'll be ready to retire. Is that a little extreme, or does this, this idea that people are just so confused about what is right and what is wrong, the government basically doesn't have to do anything?
I think you've touched on a real problem. Again, not every public official is like this. There are lots and lots of people who do the people's work and do it with pride, dignity, and are effective in their jobs. But there are, unfortunately, too many people who are there for the wrong reasons. They're there to get reelected, right? They're there to build their social media following. They're there to enjoy the trappings of office. But they're not there to roll up their sleeves and do the people's work. And you see that more and more these days. I think in the age of social media, when you can tweet, you can do Instagram, Facebook posts, things of that nature, and there's, people are walking down the halls of Congress taking selfies and things of that nature, it is a diversion from the things that matter the most, and it's a real problem.
In writing How America Works and Why It Doesn't, do you feel, is it a fair assessment to say that these are strictly Bill Cooper's thoughts and ideas, or did you choose to go out and initiate on your own, perhaps somewhat of a survey or get a sense or the pulse Everyday folks, people that you can cohorts, people that you work alongside with, or is this basically, Bill Cooper's ideas?
Well, they're definitely my ideas. It's definitely my own thesis about the country and what the root cause of our problems are. What I would say is I tried to include in that thesis in the book a lot of information about what American people are thinking. There's a lot of polling data. I cite Pew Research and Gallup a lot. And of course, my own views are shaped by conversations I have with lots of people. So I tried to get a sense of where we are as a people. And again, my thesis is it's the American people themselves. It's us. It's the people, not just government, not just some figurehead, but it's the people and our own polarization, our own political dysfunction that lies at the root of what we're experiencing now. And so in some ways, I think I did both. I own the book. It's mine. It's my ideas. It's my conclusions. But I did try to include my sense of where we as a people are collectively.
Are you optimistic that there is a time, through the people's, through the ideas and the voice and the thoughts of the American people, that government first and foremost, I think they set the tone, will set a pause and say, okay, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. You're right that we've defaulted in that area, and we need to bring things back. We need to make America great again. So I guess the question, again, based on the research and what you've put between the pages of the book, does government at some point stop to think and say, you're right, we need to continue to make this country great, and we can only do that by listening to the people?
I am optimistic overall. The American experiment, we're now several hundred years in, has been one of progress over time, but not in a linear fashion. We don't get better every day. We take steps forward, we take steps back. And I am ultimately optimistic that right now what we're experiencing is a clear decline in the health and sanity of our democracy, but not a permanent downturn. I don't think America peaked years ago and will never return. I think we have a variety of issues. We need to digest our new media ecosystem and get more understanding of how it works. We need to get rid of some of the more nasty, extreme elements of our population and political discourse and our polity. But yeah, I think all over time, I do think we will, as we always have historically, overcome this and get back on track. So I am optimistic ultimately.
Does the idea of in the year 2024, shortly the year 2025, does the idea of a two-party system still make sense?
I think it would be great for the country if we had more meaningful political parties. So there's several reasons why. I mean, number one is the Democrats and the Republicans, they're in this bitter rivalry, two juggernauts battling every day. And the fewer the tribes, the worse the tribalism. And so much of our politics today is one side pointing the finger at the other side and saying, you're bad, you're terrible. And I think if we had more parties that were not just third-party spoilers every so often, but actual parties, we'd reduce that tribalism. I think we'd also welcome into mainstream political discourse lots of important ideas. I mean, there's lots more out there that we could be thinking about than just what the Republicans want to do and what the Democrats want to do. And so if we had more ideas, we'd get rid of that polarization and that dysfunction. We'd have a more vibrant marketplace of ideas. Now, that doesn't mean all of our problems would be solved. We'd still have all sorts of challenges. We'd still have polarization. We'd still have gridlock in Congress, things of that nature. But in terms of injecting new, positive, energetic ideas into the marketplace of ideas, I think additional political parties would be great.
I think a lot of people would agree with you. I guess the hard part is when you have well-established, and in this case, as everybody well knows, the Democrat and Republican are still the major political parties in this country. They raise a lot of money, and make no mistake about it, the money is still the major factor in how, you know, how much you'll grow, how fast you'll get your message out there. It's responsible for so many things. I hate to make it sound like it's clearly a money issue, but, you know, at the end of the day, it does come down to that. So, if there are two, three, four, numerous other parties, other ideas, other candidates, other people who want to put forth an idea, many times they're eclipsed by the sheer magnitude of established parties, right?
That's very well put, Al, and I think you're exactly right. I think the money is a huge factor. Democrats and Republicans are not very good, in my opinion, of coming up with the best policy ideas in any given subject. Sometimes they get to the right answer, but often they don't. But what they do extremely well, what they are very, very good at, is monopolizing their side of the aisle and doing so with huge, huge amounts of money. So they're very skillful at that, and it makes it really hard to break in. And that's why it's, you know, a seemingly permanent part of America's political system is that we have two big juggernauts, and no one else can get in. No other party can get in other than occasionally to play the role of spoiler, but not to get a real footprint in there and become a true political party on top of the Republicans and the Democrats.
Yeah, and I think most people would agree that that is still a major hurdle. And there's no clear-cut answer. It's either raise the equivalent amount of money, and that money helps to buy a force, if you will, a team, to help put forth that message. So it's going to be quite challenging. Moving forward, and I'm not looking for a ratings game here, but some people would say, well, if you go to Europe, they do it totally different. They're way ahead of us in this respect. They do a better job. Or other parts of the country, other parts of the world. I always say that my adage, and maybe because I was taught this from a very early age, that the grass is not always greener. Sure, there's some things that other countries, other governments, the way they approach issues, may have a hand up, if you will, over us. But overall, if you're someone not native to this country, do you get the sense, because I hear this often lately, Bill, people say, everyone hates us. I don't think the world hates us. Do you?
I don't think the world hates us. No, I think you get a mix of views. Certainly there are elements within countries in the Middle East and in other places where there is a lot of animosity towards the United States, but it's not everybody. I think a huge, huge swath of the world has looked at the United States as a global leader for decades and decades. And frankly, despite criticism for the United States, been grateful that we've played that role and thankful that we've been the leader of the country and not alternative countries that could have been worse for the global international order. And I think a lot of those people are anxious and want America to get back to being a rational, important leader in the world like it has been historically. And they're concerned that our domestic political dysfunction is going to cause international disorder,
and we see that daily. If we align ourselves with one country, we find even within our own country, within our own ranks, people saying, "Nope, shouldn't be doing that." We've seen that recently a few months back. With what's going on in the Middle East right now, we saw on college campuses across the country, quite an outcry, from young people seeing it one way versus another. As you said, sometimes you just have to let it play itself out. But more importantly, more importantly, does when we have elected officials and they're elected to office, whether again it's at the local level, at the federal level, and they're supposed to represent the people, and they make a decision to align themselves with one nation or a group of nations versus something else because they feel so strongly about a cause, that's democracy, right?
Exactly. Yep. I think that's right. I think that's definitely the way to think about it. And you said it well.
Well, I just think some people think that democracy no longer works. If it's not to my way of thinking, then it's all wrong. I mean, I don't know of any environment, whether it's in the workforce or in your personal life, where everything 24/7 goes, our way. It'd be great if it did, but yeah, right. You got a better chance of finding, maybe you have to reach out to the Wizard of Oz. But it sounds, Bill, I guess in the final moments that we have, I get the sense that you, as a citizen, as an individual, feel very strongly that there are still there's still so many great things about this country. But pause that for a moment and reflect on how can we make it better. So I sense, and this is a good thing, that you sound positive rather than ultra negative and saying, done, go back to the drawing board. See, I don't think that that's the answer. I think, let's take a look at where we are, where we've come, and work from where we are now and not have to, reinvent the wheel, as they say. Does that sound like the Bill Cooper who wrote this book?
Absolutely. I don't think it's helpful to tear down the whole system and think you're going to rebuild it in some wonderful image. I don't think it works that way. And I think you're right. I mean, I think the elements are there for this country to prosper in all sorts of different ways. And the key, I think the real key, is for the American people themselves, not just pointing fingers at those in elective office, because our politicians are nothing but an extension of ourselves. The people in Congress, the people who are in office, In a variety of areas, they were citizens not long ago often, and they're just a reflection of us. So the key is the American people, us, to discard this partisan warfare and this tribalism, step back, try to act rationally and think things through, not in an us versus them mentality, but in a let's get things done mentality. Let's solve our problems. Let's address global, national, local challenges in a rational way, try to be intelligent, focused, sober about governing this country. And if we can move in that direction, I think we can get right back on track. It's very difficult. It's not an easy to say, but hard to do scenario. But if we can move in that direction, I think we can find ourselves right back in the positive trajectory we've been on historically.
Yeah, hopefully most people, I have faith that most people would agree with that. Bill, as we wind down this evening, if people want to get more information about, obviously the book is widely available, How America Works and Why It Doesn't. But if they wanted to pose questions to you directly, get more information about you and your background, is there a way of doing that? Is there a website or a way of reaching you directly?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Al. So my website is will-cooper.com. So will-cooper.com. That's got my writings. It's got links to the books and my contact information as well. I love talking about these issues, writing about them, and welcome any reach out folks have. It's more than welcome.
Great. Great. Glad to hear that. It's always welcoming to have when we have a guest on, willing to dialogue back and forth with the listening audience. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions to me directly. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.